Hi, I'm Ollie from near Philadelphia.
I'm Sinna from Ohio.
And this is Backlist and Chill, where we read old young adult books and drink about it. We are entering season 15, our farewell tour, as it were, where we are into the second third of L.J. Smith's Night World. And so this is book number 4, Dark Angel.
It divides so neatly. Shouldn't, but it does.
It's definitely not.
I'm sure they didn't appreciate it. But having 9 books does make the omnibus situation very easy, right?
It sure does. Because could you imagine 4 books? Oh, no, you'd need to do 2 and 2.
Well, yeah, how do you divide a 10-book series, like, into an omnibus? Like, I'm sure people have done it because they're making omnibuses of series every day out there.
Isn't there an omnibus for the Kyushera? That's 5 books.
There is. I think they just stuffed them all in 1 book. Ugh.
You know what they do? They just go shrink that font down to 10. There you go.
That's fair.
Everyone's going to read it anyway. Just buy it.
Ugh. God, I have seen those doorstopper Amy bind-ups, and no thank you.
Right, they're like 1,000 pages long.
Now, how do you read something that thick? I mean, granted, I don't read physical books anymore anyway, but...
That's fair. I guess it's not a book you carry around with you to, like, school or work.
Absolutely not, unless you're also using it for self-defense.
I use it to hold down my papers.
You have the omnibus. Those are pretty hefty, right?
Yeah. They're, So I was noticing that this book was listed as 240 pages, and I was like, no, it wasn't. It's 207. So, like, they did do a little bit of shrinking. Let me see what page it starts on. Yeah, it starts on page 5. So, like 200 pages. And then the whole omnibus ends... So it ends on 663. So yeah, it's like almost a 700 page thing. I could not hold 2 of them in one hand kind of thing. Like if I was like stretching out my like fingers and thumb trying to put around it, I don't think I could reasonably grab 2 of them.
How does this one read? Like when you're trying to actually read this physical brick of a book?
The left currently is very easy to read.
That's fair. You are at the beginning.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the Chosen is going to work, because it's going to be like, find the tome, and just like crack it open. Mm-hmm. But the right side was always rough, especially since I really enjoy like laying down like on my back, on my stomach, and when I'm on my stomach, I feel like this is going to fall on my face.
I'm trying so hard. I get afraid of my phone when I'm lying on my back. I can't imagine having the fucking 700-page omnibus hanging over my head like a fucking sword of Damocles. Just waiting for me to get tired.
Yeah, well, and then that's right. So, like, last night I was reading, and we'll discuss it, but, like, this is a very fast read. And, you know, as a... Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with a reluctant reader at this point in my life. it's very enjoyable to find a book that... is like, well, I can just read a couple more pages. But I was tired. I was in bed. I was all snuggled up. I was like, yeah, I'll just read like a little bit and I'll finish it. And so it was just like trying so hard, but this right side is just like so chonky. And so I had to like lay the book on its side. Mm-hmm. So I got there.
Well, I'm glad that you were able to do it without injury. Godspeed on the next 2.
Oh, God. I'm really nervous about the last one. Because like... That's a lot of hefty book there at the end, because I'm pretty sure that's the longest one of them.
I don't know, but this one was definitely, I look at the chapters and then I divide them up by however many days that I have. Mm-hmm. This one only has 16 chapters, and that is by far like the shortest thing that we've read in a long time.
Yeah, I feel like she normally does like a 24 chapter book.
I wish I had digital copies. Actually, why don't I look ahead and see? Oh, so you have the fucking omnibus, so.
Right? And it keeps opening me up to Soulmate Chapter 1. So, Oh, this one only has 17, and then soulmate. And the 17th chapter, I gotta say, is 1, 2, 3, like 5 pages long. And then 17 chapters on soulmate, which is also like 4 pages. So, yeah, I guess these are just a short middle.
I guess so.
But yeah, 16 chapters doesn't feel like a lot. I feel like in the past I had to do like 5 nights of 4.
Yeah, same. That's why I was surprised to say, oh, I only have 4 days worth of reading, huh? All
right. Right?
Well, and each of those days is like, what, an hour to clip through those chapters?
Like, oh, yeah, short. So easy. It's like, when I sat down to read the first chapter, I was just like, I'll read a chapter. And I was like, that was it? I'll read another chapter. It's like, even I can do this.
Anyway. What's going on in the park? Any updates?
Well, very exciting. We are back in our haunted, like, wagon ride area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We are adding a new scene. So okay. This time, and I've done scenes like this, too, just so mm-hmm. you are aware. This can be done.
Okay.
I would never put anything in the park that I personally couldn't figure out how to do. Just, like... So everyone knows.
I love how based in reality this imaginary park is.
All the park, I'm like, nope, it's got to be right. Even in a fake world that we're just imagining and no one else is going to hear about except the 10 people who listen to our podcast.
Right? We're like, blue sky phase what? No, we're going straight to development. Practical development.
Absolutely. So this area, you turn a corner in the woods and suddenly you're in this winter wonderland.
Mm.
Where what we have is snow machines and things like that off on the side, making actual like snow come down in certain areas. And we're going to have this scene with Angel from the end. So like huge fucking spoilers, you know, like obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to have Angel causing more and more of a storm. Mm. You're going to be taking the wagon ride through a graveyard. There'll be a little girl crying out. And at the end, you're going to go through this, like, kind of wire tunnel that we're going to rig up to have, like, just, like, a couple bursts of flame.
Mm-hmm.
Just shoot out just a little bit. It will probably only work, like, 25% of the time if, you know, history with flame war holds. But I mean, it'll be really fun to go from, like, this really kind of dangerous angel who's like trying to keep you here and wants to, like, you know, if there's a girl, he's gonna probably be like, I'm gonna kill your boyfriend and take his place and things like that. And then on the other side, you know, you've got the little girl who's like trying to find a way to get out and where's her dog and all that.
Wow. Oh, okay. So the flame represents the ritual that he was trying to do. Okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of combining like the historical 1 year ago thing
mm-hmm.
and the finale. Because gotcha, I think that gotcha. Those were the two most, like, visually impressive mm-hmm. scenes.
Yeah, I was going to say, this one did not have a lot of, like, visually horrific things to draw on.
Yeah, like, I can't be like, hey guys, I'm fucking McCamey Manor, and I'm going to force you to go into this creek and have a near-death experience, sign my waiver. No.
Or, hey guys, we're just going to sit here for a minute with the existential horror of having murdered somebody. Just to get into character, you just killed a little girl.
You're there, you're ready, and go. But yeah, no, I think that having like a snow machine thing going on, we can just, you know, frost everything with like some cool spray, you know, make it sparkle mm-hmm. and all that. Get some good blue lights in some area, drop the lights to red as you're getting close to the little fire bursts and whatnot.
I'm picturing like definitely some ominous echoing laughter as you're going through this winter storm.
Oh, I love it.
You know, some it. I'm here on either side of your head.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's a great idea. I bet we could probably rig the wagons to include some of that
with some timing. Yeah. I love that. So
that could be great. If we have narrators like watching the wagon and things like that, they could even just sneak up behind a guest and just do it, because I've fucking done that. That's always great.
Have you been able to sneak up behind people as the okay, so not the driver, but you're
no,
like
no. So okay. When I did the wagon rides, it was imagine like a flatbed where uh-huh. like they would haul hay or whatever. And people sit with their feet dangling off the edges on the side. It's not very far. You can, like, hop up and off. And it's going, like, 2 miles an hour.
Okay.
Honestly, any more than that is far too fucking fast. And the narrators were there to kind of, like, set the scene for you on the upcoming scene and tell you, like, a little bit of a ghost story. And then we could walk up and down and kind of, like, be the security as well. So it's like, if someone's hitting the actors, we've seen it, and we can be like, yeah, this guy's got to get kicked out of the park. But we also got to, we were dressed up, so we could walk up behind them and, like, brush a girl's hair or something like that. Or when the inevitably big dudes, like, rolled backwards because they were so scared, you're just there, and then they're even more scared. It was great. So
that is great.
I love it. This feels like a good scene for that, since you mentioned the whole, like, right, like, whispering on your left ear kind of thing. Be good.
Yeah.
But I loved the storm. The storm was great. I think we could definitely have it feel overwhelming as you're going through it. You know, utilizing that kind of oppressiveness of nature.
I was going to say it's a great time for it, too, because Halloween is in the fall. But then I remembered that our park is year-round, so we can't really rely on that.
No, our park is year in the fall.
Wait, what? What does that mean?
It's just perpetually autumn.
Oh, okay. So in this imaginary park where we have very realistic rides, we have a time warp as well.
Yeah. When you walk through, it's just always autumn. Look, we've got all kinds of shit here. I bet our fairies can make something happen.
I love the allowances that you will make for setting, but not for the ride. The ride has to work, but it can't exist in this nebulous eternal autumn.
Look, if I have to figure out a way to, like, install trees that are not really trees, like, closest to the edge and always have them in, like, full autumnal bloom, I'll do that set dressing. Like, I'll do it.
Well, that sounds incredible. I love that our Night World Hayride is finally coming together. You know, I was listening to the previous three episodes just to sort of remember, you know, what happened in those books.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did not realize that the park came into creation in the first episode of our Night World season.
Because I said Backless and Chill Land?
Yes. Yes.
How did that happen? I thought we had Julian rides and things like that.
No, we didn't have a Julian ride. I just insisted that you, of course, had hired a Julian actor, and you said, oh, yes, of course, you know.
Oh, yes, and.
This, yes, you did. For quite a while.
My one weakness, yes, and.
Because presumably the park had itself been in development for a while. So it has more
rides. Since season one, of course, naturally.
Yes. So it has more rides than what we've actually described. We just don't really mention them.
I was listening to one the other day where you mentioned wanting someone to do a Disneyland-style map for it. And I'm like, I still want that.
I know. I was thinking about that, too. I was like,
it'd be so good.
I know. Again, I wish I had any artistic skill whatsoever.
Right? All I can do is talk.
Right? I talk. I can craft pretty decently well, but only with materials that other people give me. Yep. I don't know any artists, unfortunately. I mean, I guess, you know, we know Raven, but I'm not going to be like, hey, Raven, draw a fucking park map
in the style of the Disneyland maps. right yeah no right. I don't know anyone who does that. I know so many artists, but like nobody who does that,
right? Because it's half art, but it's also a lot of like its own branch of like graphic design, you know.
Yeah, it's a little marketing, it's a little art.
Yeah,
but between that map and the desire for a backlist and chill booze book, what are those fucking called?
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like a cocktail recipe book?
Yeah, a cocktail recipe book. There we go. Oh, okay. Backlist and Chill cocktail recipes. Like, would have been good.
I'm deeply amused by the idea of our cocktail recipe book. Half of the recipes are just like, I don't know, fuck it.
Yours are like, here's pineapple, here's orange juice. Mine are absinthe, ginger ale.
It's like, you know, ingredients. whatever juice you have laying around.
Literally.
I don't know.
No, it would be so fun. Go to your fridge. Do you have juice? Yes, then you don't need to go to the store.
Right? Use that one. What soda do you have? Yeah. Do you have any canned sparkling waters? Sure. Dump that in there.
You want the essence of the podcast. You don't need the exact ingredients.
I mean, that is the essence of the podcast, just sort of dumping shit together and hoping it tastes good.
And sometimes it does not.
Nope.
And we drink it anyway.
There is a percentage of failures.
We'll put a little, like, sad face next to the ones that don't work, but you can try it if you want to, so you can, like, have been where our taste buds have been.
Right. Like, if you really want to, you can spend $20 on a pepper vodka.
Oh,
we've talked about this.
Yup, I remember.
You know, ironically, we had a really good drink at the Hadestown musical. I think it was the one that we saw with you.
Mm-hmm. Did it have pepper vodka in it?
It was Ancho Reyes chili.
Hmm.
And it's so good. But yeah, so some pepper liqueurs can be good. Just not that one.
Speaking of booze, what are you drinking?
Thank you for asking. So I figured pretty early on because I'm in that week between paychecks and I have no money. So I knew that I was going to have to just sort of make do with what I have at home. And I figured since Jillian very early in the book, warmed up with a cup of cocoa. I was like, oh, I can make something, a spin off that. And then as the book progressed and the topic that we will discuss in detail, a specific cocoa and coffee-based drink came to mind. So I am drinking my memory of what was in Raven's recipe.
Oh, I wish you asked. I literally have the ingredient list just sitting next to me all the time.
I know. You know what? I also know that it's in our Discord, but I honestly have been so busy that I just have not had the chance to actually look at it. But I mean, that in itself is also very backlist and chill of us, right? Yes. Like, I made a bootleg version of a fucking cocktail recipe somebody made.
A fan
for us.
Cocktail. Yeah, so I know this cocktail exists already. It's a fan cocktail, but this is what I had, so you do you.
That's the little note next to Raven's ambiguously brown recipe in the cocktail book.
Yep, because we don't need a whole new page. So what did you make?
So I did a hot chocolate packet, some coffee, some cinnamon sugar, some almond milk, and a hefty pour of rum chata.
Ooh, yeah.
I still do not have the $20 to blow on a whip shot, so, no. You know.
I feel like just some whipped cream is good.
You know, I didn't have that either, so I'm just drinking it. We're drinking it dry.
Okay. Although I do remember that the specific whipped cream also was not white, because it all had to be ambiguously brown.
Right, yeah, because it's like a mocha one, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was real good.
Yeah, I know. I'm jealous. Someday I will shell out the $20 for the whip shot, and then I'll make a proper ambiguously brown. But for today, we have the variant ambiguously brown, and it is really fucking good.
Nice. I love this. It's such a good drink.
So good. It is a good drink. I'm very glad. I've never had rum chata before, so I appreciate Raven sort of bringing that into my world.
I'd never had the abuela chocolate. Oh my gosh, ooh. It's so fucking good.
I know. I was actually genuinely on the internet looking for a recipe. Like, what the fuck is in abuelas? Can I make it from shit that I have in my cabinet?
You can. It just has a little kick somewhere.
You know, nobody will tell you what the kick is. The closest I got was somebody saying, like, I don't know, they put cinnamon in it or something. So I'm like, fine, cinnamon sugar, fuck it. Anyway, that's what I'm drinking today. Ollie, what are you drinking?
So I wanted to obviously find something that could match this book, since we only have a couple left. And I went looking through the magic liquor cabinet, because I didn't know we had liquor in this house. And then suddenly there was a magic liquor cabinet, and none of it sounded appealing.
Aw.
like, maybe the Midori with the absinthe, but I was like, you know, I need a mixer. I can't just do booze on booze on booze.
Oh, no.
So I looked into it and was like, Coca-Cola and absinthe is called a fairy. So I'm like, all right, cool. And then I thought, I just had Coke earlier this morning. I had a Diet Coke. Let's not do it. So I thought, okay, I fucking love root beer and I've been meaning to do that. So I was going to go out. Mm-hmm. Magically, there was root beer in the fridge from a party from several weeks ago.
Hey.
So I have done 1.5 ounces of the St. George absinthe, 5 ounces of just like an A&W root beer. This typically has rosemary that gets smoked and then like put there. And it's normally called root of all evil.
Interesting. That makes sense.
Right? It's very cool. People say like, oh, it's reminiscent of the being in the church and the incense and all that. I'm like, very nice. I don't have rosemary. That bush is dead in the backyard. So I'm sure that root beer and absinthe is called something else. Probably. Mm-hmm. Instead, I get to call it a dark angel. Ba-bam!
Hey!
So there we go. Root beer, absinthe. It's good. I probably would put more root beer. Or maybe I would just do one shot of absinthe, but yeah. And I've got these 2 gigantic ice cubes, like square ice cubes. It's good. You know, I definitely think I would like a little more root beer, but it is what it is. And it's tasty. And root beer is nice with absinthe. So
that makes sense. They both, I haven't had root beer in a long time because I'm not a fan, but it tracks that would be in the same family as absinthe.
Yeah, it's got that kind of tingly, spicy, minty thing in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. I'm glad that it's good. I saw your picture. It's very pretty.
Oh, thank you. I worked very hard on that because I had time.
I know. I saw it. I'm like, there are so many props.
I liked finding my little branch. And I was like, oh, I can make it look like you're looking through a tree branch.
I know, your pictures are always so well staged. I appreciate
it. Thank you. And as we only have a few of these left, gotta bring my A game.
Yeah. So good job all around. Clap, 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 clap.
All right, we are on to the blurb.
All right, hit me.
All right. Nightworld number 4, Dark Angel by L.J. Smith. On a cold winter day, Jillian Lennox almost dies, but she is saved by an angel. His hair is golden, his eyes are as violet as her own, and when Jillian comes back from her near-death experience, he comes to her, an invisible guardian that only Jillian can see. Angel whispers the secrets of popularity in her ear. Overnight, the once-shy Jillian becomes a sensation, and David, the boy she has loved for years, finally notices her. But then, Angel begins to make bizarre demands, drawing Jillian into a world of risk and dark excitement. At last, she has to face the terrifying question, who is Angel? What has he brought back from the other side? And can she and David find out his secret before it's too late?
Bum, bum, bum.
Also, I want to say there were so many errors in that I had to just kind of like figure out.
Like typos?
Yeah, like missing words, typos, wrong words. Her last name is spelled wrong, so.
Oh my god. You know, Goodreads is so fucking hit or miss on their summaries. I don't understand it, but whatever. So, I mean, it sounds accurate, right?
Yeah. Not a lot happens in the book. Like, it's pretty straightforward, you know, like this plot, the end.
Yep.
It's pretty nice.
It does a pretty good job of communicating all of this stuff without wholly giving anything away. Although I feel like to actually give it away, you would need like another 3 paragraphs. So
yeah, but it does. Yeah, it does a very good job. Lets me know what I'm getting into. I would not then go and read the book and be like, what? Who wrote that blurb?
Right. I think I might have been better served by reading the blurb before reading this again, because I was like, for the first half of this book, I was like, where's the horror? Like, where's the scary part? What is going on? And then, you know, we got to the scary part and I was like, oh, right.
That was the tension.
Yeah.
So,
right.
At the beginning of the omnibus, it says, I'm going to read you the thing at the beginning of the omnibus, actually.
Okay.
The night world. Love has never been so dangerous. The night world isn't a place. It's all around us. The creatures of night world are beautiful and deadly and irresistible to humans. Your best friend could be one. So could your crush. The laws of night world are very clear. Humans must never learn that the night world exists, and members of night world must never fall in love with a human. Violate the laws, and the consequences are terrifying. These are the stories about what happens when the rules are broken. So, like, that was my introduction to Dark Angel, where I'm like, oh, okay, I know, you know, what's going to happen. But also this sense of horror, again, of being like, oh, yeah, right, L.J. Smith, horror. And like you said, you get into it. It's not very horrifying for a very long time.
You know what? I'll save it for when we talk about the plot. But yeah, this one did strike, did hit different than the other ones have. But yeah, so, I don't know, good blurb, good job, good blurb. No lies, appreciate it.
Talk about that cover.
Yeah, so I was looking through my books today to take my picture, right?
Yeah.
And I realized that Dark Angel is the only book that I don't own the original copy of.
What?
I know, so I have...
I'll have to get this for your birthday or something.
I thought that I was missing other books in the series too, but no, it turns out that I have all of the original 1996 editions of the Night World books, except for Dark Angel.
It's still very exciting to have so many of them.
It is. They're precious. I would never part with them. I do have the fancy one, the sort of brownish red one with the silver like designs and stuff.
That's
on
the one
it.
That I clicked on Goodreads to read the long one on. Because it's so pretty.
It is. They're all gorgeous. So I do have a copy of it, but I don't have the original copy.
Gotcha. Those are the ones that I want.
What, the fancy covers? I know they come in a box set too. Amazon has them with a fancy design on the box. Yep.
That's amazing.
I know. I do want to talk about the original cover.
Yeah, it's
because
wild.
Because they're so good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we got ourselves another San Julian joint. Mm-hmm. I was blissfully reminded of San Julian, drawer of Dracula's. And...
I forgot. He's going to draw a Dracula.
I don't say nice things about things we've done very often, but those Nightworld episodes are good. I stand by them. Anyway, we're still, by the way, able to enter to win a Nightworld flower pin. So book four is still out there.
We'll have them at the end of the ride.
Oh my god, I would love that. Someone make us bespoke Nightworld pins. That would be our biggest selling merch, honestly. With the way that pins are so popular, if we had a bunch of different black flowers.
Yep, I was looking at the rose on the cover, and I'm like, oh, black rose, black iris, black dahlia.
Black dahlia, yep. Yeah, we could make bank.
Pins for circle daybreak, circle midnight, yep.
This is some Vampire the Masquerade shit where you exactly. just have the pins for all the different factions. 100%.
I want you to know, all I have to do is glance up from my microphone and I see my Toreador anti-tribute and my Zamecho pins from Vampire the Masquerade.
Nice. Oh, nice, yeah. Nice.
And at my side, my beautiful changeling pin that you got me with a rainbow all over it.
I'm glad. Honestly, you know, we went to Gen Con last year. There's a whole fucking exhibit hall full of booths selling really cool stuff. My favorite find was the booth in the underground hallway selling Vampire the Masquerade pins.
I'm going to guarantee that they weren't even on the list. They were just some vampire that set up shop.
They're like, hey man, you want some pins?
It's a Toreador here to get you into, finger quotes, LARPing. Anyway.
Yeah. We would need those pins at the end of the ride.
We would, absolutely. So, this cover. Dominant color on this one is a sort of icy, pale, white blue.
Mm-hmm.
It is, the primary image is sort of split between Jillian, huddled at the bottom, up against a gravestone, which she is sort of brushing with her hand. Clearly a reference to the, you know, the end of the book.
It's funny because she does not look like she would at the end of the book.
I mean, she has the haircut.
No, her haircut's like a fucking pixie cut.
It is a Saint Joan Bob, because I had to Google and find out what the fuck that was. Yep. She says a Saint Joan Bob, and I had no idea what she was talking about. She was talking about a Joan of Arc haircut.
Oh, gross. No, my headcanon is much better.
So, haircut is accurate, unfortunately. And above her is Angel, the sickliest looking motherfucker I've ever seen. Like, good God. His face is weirdly, like, almost alien looking. He looks like a gray, honestly. Like, he's got these weirdly deep set eyes and this very, like, pale face and a sort of, like, angry
it's got a expression. Green overlay to it on mine. Does yours?
I mean, so I'm looking at a photo of it. Mine looks blue.
Well,
so
just him.
No,
or maybe it's a yellowy color that makes it look green.
I think so, because his hair is yellow and his skin tone is kind of yellowish.
Okay, yeah.
But with the blue, it probably, you know, does the green thing.
It's weird.
But yeah, he looks weirdly alien, weirdly skeletal. You know, he's supposed to be crazy hot, but also this is San Julian we're talking about.
He only knows how to draw Draculas.
You know, I was just saying. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen American Dad, but it does remind me a little bit of when the alien in that show puts on a wig.
Yes. Fucking love Roger.
So there's Roger on the cover in a...
Roger walks up and he's like, I'm an angel. Hello.
I'm not here to do anything nefarious. Now please come with me to this very ominous bar.
I need some coke.
I wish, Jesus, if there had been any kind of edge to that, I would have loved it. But so he's in like a flowy kind of angel looking robe with these big robe looking wings.
Yeah, they're not wings. If they were wings, that'd have been great. Or just like light.
No, it's just looks like long fabric, but it's clearly meant to imply wings.
Mm-hmm.
And the text above him is that LJ Smith Nightworld in gold and Dark Angel in sort of an orangish red. And then for the border, we actually have some nicely relevant images this time. Although, now that I think about it, there's not a barn, is there?
No.
Like, the barn's not a thing.
I think it's just kind of meant to... Oh, you know what I bet it is? Wood bridge.
Like a covered bridge?
No. Wood bridge. The
town?
The town, yeah. Because they were talking about it and it sounded like middle of nowhere kind of thing. Or, Yeah, no, that's the only thing I can think, because I wish it was a Victorian house, so it was the Black Iris Club.
Yeah, it definitely fits in with the sort of pastoral, snow-covered farm look. So I looked at it and I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And then I was like, oh, wait a second.
Yeah, I think it's meant to be Woodbridge, where the witches are, potentially.
Yep. So we have that across the bottom. We've got a candelabra on the right-hand side going into a screaming woman's face. Our black rose, of course, even Naturally. Though vampires are not really the primary creatures in this one. We've got a creepy-looking cat statue, a little thing of holly, and like a sort of Christmassy touch, which this book also doesn't really take place during Christmas. So that's a little
out of
place.
It's all before Christmas.
Yeah, and they don't talk about it. Like, Christmas is not... Well, no, they do talk about it a little bit, because she says her dad will be home before Christmas. Anyway.
As the person who worries about the timelines, I was aware of this.
Yeah, I was just like, I don't know. It takes place during winter sometime. November, January, who can say?
It was the 2 weeks before Christmas break.
Okay, that does make sense, because they do talk about it a little bit. Below that, there is what looks like a mirror almost, or a charm, and then an angel statue, like one that you would see at a graveyard. Okay. Below that, there is an inexplicable face.
It's a Dracula.
Okay, I guess this is our Dracula. This is like our fucking Nosferatu Dracula right here.
Yeah, I feel like this face may have been on other covers, but if it wasn't, this is probably meant to be like, their faces, they were horrible.
Is that something they say in the book?
Yeah, when she's at the Black Iris Club, that like something was wrong with their faces.
Okay. I've already lost so much of this book. Anyway, below that, there is a ribbon and some broken Christmas ornaments. So laying in on that Christmas imagery.
Oh, I thought they were berries because I can't see very, very well on this image. It's not big. It won't let me zoom.
Yeah, they do look like blueberries at first glance, but yeah, little Christmas bulbs. This is the weakest cover we've had so far.
All of the scary stuff is like, here's the Nosferatu face, here's a black cat, here's a screaming woman. And the middle is just like, not even an R.L. Stein book.
Yeah, there's not a lot of menace to it. It's kind of limp in terms of like, it's not really pretty and it's not really scary. It's just kind of meh.
I would have liked him to be over her left shoulder looking out at us.
Yeah, yeah, just like a more ominous pose. God knows they put like fucking Eric in a intimidating pose on the last one. Right? That was wholy unnecessary.
We were like, what is happening here?
Ash had his weird like wizard pose. So yeah, I don't know. Could have done better, St. Julian. I might have to send this back.
I like to think that he just didn't get enough direction.
Which is weird, because this cover is like the most specific so far. Like, all of the other ones were generic faces and poses and not representations of, like, a scene that happens in the book, and this one is.
Oh, yeah, like, literally, the scene happens, and he's there, and he's leaning on the stone, and she's going to wipe off the snow to see it. Like, it's a scene.
Yeah, yeah, it's first time.
But it is unmistakable. Like, you look at that, and it fits in with the other ones. It's got that same look. You wouldn't think it was something else.
Oh no, absolutely. You got that border, you got that art style, like,
yep, the font.
You know, it's not my favorite, but even so, I appreciate the vibes.
And that somewhere out there he actually painted this.
Yeah. Did good work, St. Julian. Alright.
Let's talk about this book.
So Jillian is a teenager. She's a junior. She's a junior in high school. They make like a big deal about it. She is walking home from school one day and she hears a sound in the woods. It's the middle of winter. It's snowing, as Ollie said earlier. It's 2 weeks before Christmas. So she goes into the woods because she thinks she hears a child in distress. And as she wanders around searching for this child, she slips and falls into the water where she almost drowns, rescues herself just to die of hypothermia. She dies. She literally dies two chapters.
Mm-hmm.
We actually see the process of her like crossing over and stuff, which is so much more new age woo-woo than I ever remembered Nightworld getting.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that a Christian god is basically canon is wild to me.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jillian ends up in, we'll say, non-denominational heaven, where she is greeted by a super hot, the most beautiful teenage boy that she's ever seen. He's yet another hot blonde. LJ can't get enough.
I was so surprised by this whole another blonde because she's also blonde.
Right? She's blonde, he's blonde, Ash is blonde. Thankfully, LJ is very specific about what kind of blonde.
Yeah.
So you can differentiate them, even though if you were to like look at this cover, I would believe somebody if you told me that that was Ash. So so she sees this hot blonde guy. He tells her it's not her time yet. And that she can make the choice to go back. And she sort of wavers for a minute because she's, you know, she's a teenager with teenager problems.
Yeah.
She has a little bit more serious problems than that because her mother and father are kind of on the rocks. And her mother is an alcoholic and she's not coping with that alcoholism very well. So Jillian feels very alone and abandoned. So she considers,
what do I have to go back to?
Yes, very, very teenager of her. And the angel kind of prompts her and sort of encourages her to make the choice to go back to try to. And it's that LJ philosophy of like, go back and do something good, like do good actions. And so she says, okay, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do something with my life. And so she goes back down into her body in the throes of her hypothermia, stumbled back out onto the road where she is picked up by her crush, David Blackburn. He of literally the most generic name.
Yeah. And it's okay because he's her neighbor. So like, I let that one slide. I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
So he picks her up. He tries to warm her up, help her out. He takes her home. He really goes above and beyond. Like, we don't see very much of David, and he does not get a lot of characterization.
God, no, not at all.
This first sequence where he really goes out of his way, he, like, takes her into the house. He's working on getting her, like, de-thawed. He's about to, like, strip her himself to put her into the tub, but not in a pervert way. He thinks she's a child, or he thinks she's literally a middle schooler, so yeah. It's very non-sexual.
Which was very funny when, like, she realizes it and you look back and you're like, oh my god, this guy was like, small child, you are dying.
Right?
It's like, good boy.
He is a good boy. He's trying to care for this little neighbor girl.
Who's actually basically his age.
Right. Who's also his soulmate. So his girlfriend comes in. She helps him out. Don't worry about why she's there. It's not important. And they end up thawing Jillian out in the tub, and she sort of overhears them saying, like, not mean things about her, but not terribly flattering things about her.
Yeah.
And it makes her upset, and for some reason, for somehow, a mirror breaks. Don't know why. That won't be important. From there, Jillian realizes that the angel has come back with her. And the next sort of sequence of the book is the angel telling her that he's here to give her whatever she wants. He's going to help her make something of her life. She's kind of embarrassed because what she wants is to be popular. What she wants is to be loved because she's sort of missing that in her life. And he's like, no, that's cool. I get it. You know, I will help you be popular. And so he does. He instructs her on how to cut her hair. He gives her tips on what to wear. And when Jillian goes to school the next day, she looks like not a middle schooler anymore.
She's wearing all black.
Her outfit descriptions are very funny. A, still on point. You know, in the year 2023, it's still a good outfit, which is impressive. It is a good outfit. For the 90s.
Yeah. I was actually sad that I didn't have time to dig through my makeup because I was like, I know I've got a red lipstick in there.
Right? Like, I feel like if everybody listening to this podcast looked in their closet, they would be able to throw together the outfit that Jillian wears back to school on the first day.
Right? It sounded awesome. I was like, oh, I want that sheer shirt to go over like a fucking black camisole.
So there was something she said about it where she's like, she was wearing this, and this, and that's all. And I was like,
what else would you wear?
That's a shirt, that's pants, that's shoes. And I was like, is she not wearing a bra? Is that what we're implying? Or was...
But if she looks like a middle schooler, does it matter?
I know. She doesn't really do the thing that a lot of teenagers in YA do where they're like, my titties are so small, or my titties are too big.
Too big? They're a B cup? Oh no.
We don't know the status of Jillian's rack, but
thank you,
I was Elsa. Just yes, we do appreciate that, but I was amused by the idea that LJ thought that like a camisole and a sheer overshirt was just so scandalous. Very funny.
Which tells us about Jillian and her people and things like that, that it's like, I can see your skin through your shirt, young lady.
Right? It's that fucking high school dress code thing of like, I can see your shoulders.
Collarbones.
Right? What are we fucking Mennonites here? Like, what are you talking about? It's a shoulder.
What did she used to wear? 8 coats?
I think so. I think she might have gone to school in literally 8 coats.
And now she's not even wearing a coat.
Anyway, she goes to school. Angel, which is what he tells her to call him, is in her head, inside her mind, you might say.
And inside her mind.
Inside her mind. He sort of whispers to her, like, what to say to sound clever and cool. He tells her who to hang out with, and through his machinations, she becomes friends with the popular kids and also begins to sort of develop her own confidence in herself, which sort of helps propel her through the rest of the book.
Yeah.
So.
That's cute.
In the meantime, she gets closer to David, who unfortunately has a girlfriend, but fortunately, unfortunately, is also her soulmate.
And all of this is like still day one.
Yes, good God, I know. We have not moved past day one yet. In fact, we're backtracking to talk about the soulmate thing because it happens the next morning. So they are soulmates. Jillian doesn't know that. David doesn't know that because Jillian is not a knowing Night World citizen.
Correct.
So all they know is that they feel a really strong connection now that he knows that she's not a Eight. Middle schooler. And they almost kiss, even though they've literally had two conversations. This is pretty egregious.
I honestly was like, what is happening?
I know, right? Like, of all the characters that we've seen so far, these two have the least chemistry. It's pretty rough.
Yeah, I honestly thought it was fake.
You did? You thought it was fake soulmates?
I thought that Angel was just, like, forcing him to feel something about her so that he could get his wings or something in the beginning.
Oh, gotcha.
Because I didn't know what was up. It's like, I know Angel's not an angel, but like, I don't know what the fuck is happening here. But David was just like, I don't know, I feel some connection to you and trying to lean in and kiss you. And I was like, what? Mm-mm. This is fake.
And we're on book four. So, you know, conceivably, maybe LJ does have angels. We don't know at this point.
Right? And maybe they need girls to smooch boys. I don't know.
That would be, honestly, I've never heard anything that sounds more LJ than angels designed to make heterosexual couples. That's
Jillian, I see you might be a lesbian. Let's fix that. She's not. She's not a lesbian at all. She's definitely just into David.
Yeah, no, lesbians, again, don't exist. Not at despite all. This being written after bisexuals were invented.
Right? Bisexuals have been around for 4 years, Lisa Jane.
Where are the bis?
Willful ignorance.
I know. LJ. So, yeah, David is her soulmate. Problem is he has a girlfriend, and both Jillian and he are both like, well, we can't. You're not going to cheat, and I'm not going to, like, make you cheat. So we're just going to have to, like, leave room for Jesus and keep our hands to ourselves. But Angel is not as scrupulous. So he sort of manipulates Jillian. All of this, again, day one, he manipulates Jillian into confronting David's girlfriend about cheating with another boy, which Angel knows that she did. And through his machinations, David sees this confrontation, realizes that his girlfriend has cheated on him, which frees him up to begin dating Jillian like the next day.
Yep. It was wild.
It really is. Like you said, a lot of this happens in the first 2 days, and there are a lot of changes. So over the next amount of time, because I was not the one keeping track of the timeline.
I can tell you if you tell me what you want to jump to.
Well, so the next chunk of the book is her being popular and getting to understand her abilities, yeah?
She doesn't yet know her abilities. Soulmates has not come up, and her witch powers have not come up. But yeah, it's basically the next 3 days at school, because she mentions wearing a different outfit every day. My note is, next few days, hot at school.
I mean, that's basically it. That's a good summary.
Yeah.
She just continues to build her popularity. She gets invited to a party. At the party, she overhears...
Wait, I'm going to pause you there.
Mm-hmm.
The party was planned on Monday when she was hot at school, because all the boys were into her.
Mm-hmm.
And then the stuff with Tanya, the girlfriend, and David happened Monday afternoon. And then Tuesday, them getting together was David being like, maybe I could drive you to the party on Saturday. And then she was hot at school for 3 days.
Yep. There's just so much going on. A lot of depth in this book.
I know, right?
So at the party, she says no to alcohol, and it's really cool, and everybody clapped.
And another girl is, like, giving her a Coke.
It's just very so funny. This, again, very LJ, very 90s. It's okay not to drink, kids. Don't give in to peer pressure. Alcohol will give you nothing.
Don't destroy your brain cells. Mm.
Meanwhile, Angel, the only cool character, is like, I don't know, I like booze.
He like literally quotes, he's like, doesn't like, you know, wine make the hearts of men happy? And she's like, drinks a Coke.
Which was amusingly also foreshadowing. So like, good job, LJ.
Yeah.
At the party, she overhears David's ex-girlfriend and another girl at school talking about how they are going to get revenge on David and Julian.
Jillian. You keep saying Julian.
Jillian. Sorry. It's not that Jillian, unfortunately.
God, David and Julian. I'd feel bad because David has no personality.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a trade down for Julian, but...
Yeah. I don't ship it.
I would take anything that would liven this book up a little bit.
Okay, wait. How did you describe how she finds out about it? Because this is when they, like, start to feel soulmatey.
Is it?
Yeah, because they, like, go upstairs and almost kiss but don't, or do kiss. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. There are a couple of... For a romance book, by the way, the romance really takes a back seat in this one. There are only a couple of kissy scenes. And coming off of, like, Daughters of Darkness and Spellbinder, I feel like even in those two very, very chaste books, we get a little bit more of the romantic tension.
Yeah, David felt like a sexy lamp, which is, I mean, that's a nice switch, but it was just her dragging around this boy prop.
Right, because the premise of this series is soulmates, so she has to have a soulmate.
Yeah. Otherwise, we're going to be shipping her with Angel.
Which
we'll get to.
It's tangentially there, yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, and she's a little into it too, and we'll get to that.
I will say, I was thinking about, like, why this book was one that I didn't have a super clear memory of. And I think, again, it's that Thea-Eric problem of just, like, an incredibly bland couple and a very underwritten love interest. And, like, if I, 12-year-old Sina, am reading this for the romantic, horny kissing feelings, yeah. LJ is really denying us. There's no horniness whatsoever. And I know you're capable of it, LJ. We've all read it. Forbidden Game.
Right? When you said Thea and Eric, I remembered who Eric was. And I went, oh, fuck, he had more personality than David.
I know, even him. And it's such a shame because there's like an interestingly shaped cardboard cutout in David where he's like, his cliff notes are that he's a bad boy, he's like the rebel, and he's the boy at school that some people find kind of scary, you know. It's sort of implied that he's
never
like,
once felt that from him.
No, absolutely not. He's a fucking kitten the whole way through.
Right, he's had a near-death experience,
right, which I thought was going to come to something more, but it doesn't really.
No.
It's sort of, also just a heads up everybody, it is thundering and raining like wild outside, so if you hear that, my apologies.
Oh, no.
I can't do anything about it, unfortunately.
You are not Angel. You cannot control the weather.
I have not found that switch, and I'm not happy.
Yeah, he's got nothing.
You know, it's like sort of implied that he might be like, well, I guess not, because like I sort of associate like a dangerous sort of rebel type with also like poverty. But he lives in the same neighborhood as Jillian and she seems fine. So,
yeah, at the end, we get thrown that he's got a stepmom, like it's no big deal because it's not.
I know, it's so casual. It's like, oh, here's a little bit more about his fucking family life.
I mean, it's nice, but it doesn't give you anything.
No, it doesn't do anything. Although, now that I think about it, Jillian does talk about how a lot of her stuff is, like, older and hasn't been replaced because her parents haven't had the money. So sure. Maybe they are in, like...
less wealthy area. Well, in the party, when she goes to that, it was so funny. She was describing the house, and I'm just like, aw. Because it's so rich to her. And just like, oh, there's, like, these silver twig... reindeer in the front yard for Christmas all lit up. I was like, that's so cute that you're like, that's rich people.
Okay, so I'll give this book that. That's a little something that's going on. So she overhears David's girlfriend talking about getting revenge on him and Julian, and with Angel's guidance, he sort of explains to her what she can do about it. And in doing this, he takes her to a witch store. So Jillian buys these ingredients and the witch clocks it as being something that Circle Midnight might do. which we know because we and you, dear audience, have all read Spellbinder. We know that Circle Midnight are the mean witches who honestly aren't that different from the not mean witches.
Circle Midnight stuff is so silly to me.
It is. But it's meant to indicate to us that what Angel has her doing is not good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he guides her through a spell that will give Tanya an infection in her arm so that she can't write a letter to out David for cheating on an essay. And then she gives the other girl a sore throat so that she can't spread rumors about David and Julian and ruin their lives. I think this sequence, he also explains to her that she is a night world witch, like a blood witch.
Yes, this is when he reveals that she's the secret lost princess.
Yes. So we find out that she is another Harmon girl, Thea and Blaze's cousin, a couple times removed. I'm not entirely sure how that works, but their grandmother is the sister of her grandmother.
Yes.
Who was lost in the war, question mark.
The lost Harmon babies.
I don't understand how that happened, because it says that they were born in America, but somehow during World War One, and that's all the information you're going to get.
Right, like, went to England? Got separated right? from the sister? Like, why are you in England? There's a war on.
Right? It would make more sense if they were war orphans from England and yeah. some of them got adopted to America. The reverse doesn't work. They weren't bombing us. Right? So, like, what the fuck? Anyway.
Second cousins. They share the same great-grandparents.
Okay. I trust you. Don't know how any of that shit works. But she is through the matrilineal line, a direct descendant, which makes her a super special, super powerful witch girl.
Yeah, because, like, her mom and her mom and her mom. Like, there's no dad in between here.
Yeah, so she basically has the same night world status as Thea and Blaze.
Yes. Such. This feels like fanfic. This feels like night world yeah. fanfic.
This is my OC, Jillian. She's a lost Harmon granddaughter. Don't worry about
it. Elspeth Harmon.
So, in the process of introducing her to the night world, Angel becomes pushier and pushier. Yeah. And he drives her to go to a bar out in the middle of nowhere.
She drives her hours.
Yeah, it's fucking wild. Very risky. Also, we get to the end where he's sort of doing his parlor scene in the graveyard, and I don't understand why he did any of this.
Same.
But he has her go out to a bar. It's one of the same franchises that Ash went to. And she's able to sort of bluff her way in, but once she gets in there, everybody sort of immediately clocks her as like, pray, I want to eat you.
You don't know what the fuck is up.
You look like you're 12. I mean, you cut your hair, but still.
Yeah.
So she's about to get jumped by 20 vampires at once, and somebody swoops in and ushers her out, sort of claims her, and everybody is like, ha ha, have fun, you're gonna kill that child. Mm. And we find out that it is Ash.
I was happy to see a name that we knew.
Right? Also, not to like spoilers anything, but this also may be the last time we see Ash. So Ash hustles her back out to her car. It's like, I don't know who you think you are, but that was a bad idea. Get out of here. You will get eaten. In her head, Angel is very angrily arguing.
Oh, yeah. He's having a fucking bad time.
Yeah, he's having a little bit of a meltdown, arguing with Ash in Jillian's head. But Jillian ignores him because she realizes that, yes, I did almost get ate. She takes Ash's advice and leaves the club. And Ash does his little nod thing where he's like, I'm doing this for a girl.
I'm a human girl. What?
That's like, aw, like, Ash, you had a quest and LJ just kind of forgot.
Yep.
Anyway, I think the next big thing is her car crash, right?
So I don't know where specifically that was at, but like her spell worked. Tanya and Kim are out of school on Monday. Tuesday, she hears that Tanya's getting worse, and that's when she starts thinking something's maybe up with Angel, and then they go to the Black Iris. So, and then, yeah, the next day is Thursday. like, it's almost Christmas, so they gotta get a tree, and David is like, I'll take you.
That's right.
We'll go get a Christmas tree.
That's right. And they're driving at night back from the forest. She is having a conversation with David, but she's also having a conversation with Angel, and she realizes that what Angel wants...
David was really quiet because he was worried about Tanya because it had gotten really worse. And David is like, yeah, they might have to amputate her fingers. They say it's a flesh-eating bacteria. They've had to open her from shoulder to hand to try to, like, drain it. And she's just freaking out. I mean, it makes sense. She thought she was just kind of, like, giving her poison ivy.
I know. I love LJ's, like, squishy nastiness coming back a little bit. The idea that they have to fucking drain this girl by slitting her arm open is wild. I would also be upset. I'm like,
oh my god, you're just reading it. I was like, yep, I'm with you, Jillian.
So Jillian and Angel have an argument, and Angel basically lets slip that what he wants to do is kill David and possess his body.
And if he comes back a little different, you'll still know he loves you. She's like, a different, oh no.
And it's a really weird vibe because, like, we start off the book with Jillian being like, oh, Angel is hot. He's super pretty. He's the most beautiful boy I've ever seen. It's the same way that they describe, like, any vampire in this book where they're, like, inhumanly beautiful, right?
He is so supernatural.
But it's not romantic. Like, Jillian is never flustered around Angel in a way that implies that she might have a crush on him.
Yeah.
She describes it as knowing that she's loved because she feels like he's a spiritual being.
And she does say that, like, he's very hot and she loves him and, like, he knows her so well. And it's like, but you don't know shit about him.
Right. It never feels like a romantic thing from her because her romantic attention, what we get of it, is always focused on David.
Yeah.
So it never feels like a love triangle.
I mean, it feels as much of a love triangle as it feels like love between her and David.
I guess that's fair. I just, you know, in some of these books, you read them and the author is like, I want you to wonder who she's going to pick, right? Or, like, I want you to wonder, like, you know, which of these boys is meant for her. But this never...
There was never, no. He's an angel.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
And Jillian obviously never considers that because he's... And, like, look... It's not like there aren't books out there, and there aren't books out there at this time where girls are fucking angels.
Right? If he was like, hey, once you become a powerful enough witch, I could manifest, and then we could smooch.
Right? But, like, LJ never really implies that here. So when all of the sudden Angel is like, I love you, I'm your soulmate, I'm going to possess your boyfriend's body
so we can be together forever.
You're like, what?
What?
I'm sorry, what?
But you're an angel? I know Nightworld. That doesn't work that way.
Right? It's like, hey, LJ, can you come here a sec? Was this a thing? Was I supposed to be getting this vibe? Because I was not.
But he was hot.
Yeah, right. LJ's like, but no, I told you he was hot and that he knew her inside and out and loved her perfectly. And for me, LJ Smith, there's literally nothing more orgasmic than the idea of being known.
To have someone in your mind know all of your secrets and still they love you.
When you look at it that way.
Yeah.
Then it's like, well, yeah, they kind of did just fuck. So, like.
This is absolutely an LJ Smith style love triangle because that is 100%. Like, we've seen it happen for some of these characters where it's like, and then we touched our minds and we knew everything in, like, Dark Visions. But there's no reciprocation from Jillian for Angel. He just knows all of her. So when he announced, I'm in love with you and you're my soulmate, it's like, maybe? Because, like, you know everything about her and you aren't rejecting her, you feel that way? But what about the fucking, I don't know, zing that I guess used to happen here, but sometimes does and sometimes doesn't? And I'm like, maybe Angel, maybe she is Angel's soulmate, but he is not hers.
Did you think that?
I still didn't believe that he was an angel.
Sure.
I did think he was, like, something that was trying to get a body back, which ultimately I'm correct, but I didn't know what he was. But yeah, there was a moment where I was like, maybe this is the way it is. Like, I really did think that, that perspective of sometimes your soulmate is someone else's soulmate.
Interesting. I would love that for how messy it could be. but LJ would never.
No, not even for her antagonists.
Nope. It's that Daughters of Darkness thing where, like, no, the soulmates were made for each other, so they must be compatible.
Ugh, God, right?
But I will say, in the book that we shall never get, that one did have a protagonist with two canonical soulmates. Not super clear on how that happened, so
What?
We shall never know.
No, I know, I want right? that. Are there soulmates where they're just, like, actually friends?
No, yeah, possibly?
Okay. We need to just rewrite the Night World, and we'll just do all kinds of different soulmates.
Ah, man, I know, right? Ugh, yep. So much good possibility here.
Girls who are lesbians, girls who are just friends.
You know, soulmates in different shapes, and by shapes I mean geometries. Maybe we got lots of soulmates.
Yeah. I do like the idea, though, of the potential, like, circle of soulmates kind of thing. Being like, mm-hmm. You're my soulmate. Mm, this guy is. Oh, but you're not mine. This girl is. Oh, but you're not mine. This guy is. But wait, that's the first guy.
And then there's also that idea of, like, you're my soulmate, but I fucking hate you, so I'm going to date this guy over here. Like,
yeah.
Man, yep. Would be nice.
Good opportunity.
Anyway, yes. So Angel takes over Jillian's body and has her drive into a telephone pole. Honestly, I remember so little of this book, I was kind of shocked that it actually happened.
Because for poor David, he's just watching, like, his kind of girlfriend for the past week have a freak out talking to herself, yelling, and then she drives into a telephone pole being like, I don't want to do this. And it's like, what?
Right? Not just into a telephone pole, but his side of the car.
Yeah, not head on.
At the telephone pole. Like, this feels very targeted, Jillian.
What did I do? I got you a Christmas tree.
And, you know, for like 10 seconds, I was like, is this going to cause conflict? Is David going to wake up and think she was trying to kill him? Don't worry about it.
Very briefly.
It won't.
No, because they're soulmates and he trusts her implicitly forever and always. Fucking Stepford wife.
I know, that poor guy. It was such a fucking dusting of the hands by LJ, just being like, I don't want to deal with that. That's not what this book is about.
Too much conflict. I just want to write my book. Good for you, LJ.
They trust each other completely. Don't soulmates worry about it.
Soulmates never question.
She just hits the soulmate button and moves on.
Look, I know that you want tacos tonight, but I would like Thai food. So, soulmate, you want Thai food now.
Soulmate means never having to fight over where we're going to dinner because we always want the same thing.
Yep, that's what soulmates mean.
Hideous. So, at this point, Jillian's properly freaked out. She doesn't know what Angel is anymore, but she doesn't think he's an angel.
Yeah.
So she goes back to the witch from the witch shop who was nice to her.
Melusine,
a young lady in a wheelchair, which was nice. And honestly, like, kind of shocking in 2023.
To have it in 1996.
Yeah.
Was she in the group at the end of Spellbinder?
No, but there was also another wheelchair user in it. But from our podcast, you used the he pronoun, so not the same person.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's two wheelchair users in two books. That's nice, LJ. You know, it's that Captain Planet brain of hers. But Melusine is, for these books, Melusine is a character and not just her chair. So that is nice. So she goes back to Melusine and just tells her the whole fucking story. She's like, this A to B, I was in a fucking field, I died, there was this guy. And at the end of it, Melusine basically tells her, like, hey, here's a funny thing. Angels do kind of exist. We call them welcomers, or the welcoming committee, or whatever the fuck she called it. But Angel was not one of them. She thinks that Angel is some kind of spirit that just sort of hitchhiked into Jillian's near-death experience and took on the role of the angel to guide her so that he could use her to deal with his fucking plans.
Yeah.
It's normal ghost rules, right? Where, like, he's a spirit, he's upset, he didn't move on because he has something tying him to this world. She also says that, thankfully, his fucking wander radius is very small, so he has to be local. So it should be easy to find out who he is. And if she finds out who he is, then she can find out what he wants. And if she can help him find out what he wants, she can sort of help him move on, which is really the only way to deal with this problem. There's not really any spells or witch shit that she can do.
No Ghostbusters.
Yeah, no proton packs here.
I wonder if she could be able to, like, tie his soul to something the way they did in Spellbinder, but that option was never presented.
No, that is very interesting because we have had spirits previously, but yeah. Purely as, like, a sort of mindless, malevolent force. But Melusine does not give her that option, which...
It's probably more of a Circle Midnight thing anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Jillian goes and does the most LJ thing that any heroine can do. She goes to a graveyard and she yells at an arrogant man.
Is this you? Nah, this guy died way too bravely. How about this one? Fell off a fucking cart? Bet this is you.
I honestly, and I told you this on Discord, I was so like kind of checked out of this book for like 90% of it because it's just like, it's not a lot of like engaging emotional stuff going on.
Yes, this is a little power fantasy of like, I'm so popular and I get the boy, the end.
Right. I was going to say before we got to this point, like this is the most R.L. Stein LJ has ever felt. But then we get to this part and I'm just like, oh, there LJ is. The climax of this book is a young girl bullying a powerful supernatural being into feeling bad about himself. And I'm like, this is Jillian. This is Damon. This is Ash.
Yep. I do want to mention, because you skipped it. Before she went to see Melusine, she told David everything.
She did.
Which, when that happened, I was like, you fucked. You fell in love with a human, and then you told the human about Nightworld. You don't even know how bad that is.
I know, right? You remember those two things that were really problematic in the last two books?
She just didn't even know they were a problem. Here you go. This has been my day. And he went, I believe you.
I know. It was that moment where I feel that in many other books, this would have been a problem, like this sort of misunderstanding, like, are you trying to kill me? Like, maybe the cops would have been involved. She would have gotten questioned.
Right?
No. Nope. Not in this book. Nope. That's not what this is about.
So funny. But yes, all right, back to bullying the supernatural being.
Yeah. She goes into the graveyard and she bullies Angel into revealing information about himself, giving me a very, like, Jenny Jillian vibes.
And we're in the snow. I was getting big Jillian vibes this whole time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So she basically badgers him until he gives her his tragic backstory, which is that he himself is also a Harmon. Very valuable seed there.
I forgot about that.
Unfortunately, he is dead, so the seed thing probably not going to happen, but...
He must have a dad, though.
Oh, that's true. That's true. There's a...
Maybe he's got brothers?
There's valuable seed out there in this world. The witches need to find them. But yeah, if this boy had made it out to Vegas, Never a night alone. Would have been fucking constantly.
So funny.
So he found out that he was a witch and he's real psyched about it. He got kind of a superiority complex about it, which is something that Jillian was dealing with a little bit. Kind of her, like, the pride before the fall, right?
Yeah. I'm a secret lost princess of the witches. Mm.
Yeah, she's like, maybe I am better than everybody else. Maybe that's just a true thing about me.
There's special places, and I belong there, and it's the night world.
And Angel, whose name, by the way, we find out is fucking Gary.
Gary!
LJ, could you pick an unsexier name than fucking Gary?
I have an Uncle Gary, and I have never understood why my grandparents chose the name Gary.
It's the most middle-aged man name. Like, there are not babies named Gary. They come out middle-aged.
That's what I often think about certain names, right? Like, can you imagine a teenager named Gary? You're a two-year-old named Gary.
Like, no. No, you're not. You come out with sweater vest and glasses. Like, that's just how it works.
I have several names like that. That is just like, you've always been this age, right?
Yeah, right? There was not a point.
Colin Robinson, hello.
Yes, I know. It's exactly it. That's every Gary. Every Gary just hatches from another Gary and grows up in like 2 years. So Gary found out that he was a witch, was really high on his own fucking
supply. His last name was terrible too, and I don't even know how to pronounce it.
I don't remember it.
It was like Sturgeon meets Fargo.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, how do I even say that? Why would you call him that? What fucking name is that? Stop making up shit.
I know. That's the funny thing. It's like, LJ's not Amy, so I believe that this last name probably exists, but it's also very weird. It's a weird last name.
Yeah, like, right, you chose it. Like, her last name is Lennox, and it's like, I know where you stole that from.
Yeah, that's a normal name. Like, it's a name I've heard of, but yeah, his is weird. Anyway, Gary was super into himself. He went out to the forest to...
I'm sorry, I'm thinking. And he was so beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful. Imagine the girls at his school.
I have such a crush on... What was his name again? Gary?
Oh, never mind.
Like, I can't fuck a Gary.
I can't, like, scream out, oh, Gary!
My dad's named Gary. I can't. Maybe that's why he had her call him Angel. He's like, I can't be a supernatural Gary. That's just not...
But I have no creativity, so... Because I killed all my brain cells with booze.
Which he did. Canon.
He did.
So, he goes out to the woods. To do what, Ollie? What was he doing in the woods?
He wanted to do a fire spell.
Mm-hmm. What kind of fire spell?
Oh, I don't remember.
Hold on. I'm going to pull it up because that is what made me fucking scream.
I thought other things would make you scream.
No, it was this. Hold on a sec. Let me see if I can find it. He was doing, and I quote, a fire elemental spell out in the woods. And
no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah. So.
Amy.
He was doing a fire elemental spell out in the woods.
And then this is a ghost.
Yep.
Story.
Yep.
And there was another girl who died.
Yep.
Oh my. I read this book and I didn't put this together.
So, like, I was reading it and I was like, why am I getting token vibes? I'm like, there's not really anything that's happened here that's super similar to Token. I was like, I must just
be... Yeah, because, like, he was popular already, and he stopped being popular.
Right? So I was like, I must just be seeing Jesus in the cheese, you know? Like,
and it's really easy, too, when you're looking at LJ and Amy.
Yeah, I was like, I'm just connecting dots that aren't there. And then as we went on... The car crashes. The trying to possess the body. The fucking fire elemental.
So they could be together.
In the woods.
No, this is too much.
Yep. And then he finally said, "I was out in the woods casting a fire elemental spell," and I was like, "Fucking what? What elemental?" And like, I don't think LJ means it in the way that Amy means elemental.
Right. But whatever Amy took from it.
Right. That, like, it's a fire spell that went wrong, that burned somebody to death.
Yep. This is a seed.
Yes. And ultimately caused his death.
Yep.
And then now he's sort of wandering the world, bothering a girl, being, like, the quirky little angel on her shoulder. All of that was just, like,
oh. Oh, and he is, because he, like, quotes shit.
Yes, she compares him to fucking Robin Williams, and I'm like, all right, LJ.
As the genie in Aladdin, yeah.
All right, LJ, we know Aladdin just came out and it was good, but I don't need these pop culture references.
He even literally says,
you.
You've never had a friend like me at one point.
I know, he does. She's all over the references with this one.
Oh my god. Oh my god. No, the seed, there's too many seeds.
I know.
Like, it's not one for one, but it is... Like, you just took a handful of seeds out of this fucking packet and went blap.
Well, and it's like, you know, we've always talked about how weird Token of Darkness feels.
Yeah.
In Amy's backlog, and now...
Like, why? Why have it? Why have elementals? Why have ghosts? she was a ghost that wasn't a ghost. He was an angel that wasn't an angel.
Right? And it's like Dark Angel has always felt like the outlier of this series because it deals with a lot of stuff that just never comes back. Like, we never talk about this sort really? Of shit again. Yeah, no, it's all vampires and shapeshifters from now on, right? So.
This is, oh my god.
Yep. So that was where I lost my shit just a little bit. But anyway.
Yeah, I understand.
He was in the woods. He cast a fire spell. A little girl accidentally ran into it, broke the circle, and he killed her. And this is a little girl that Jillian mentioned in the first chapter as well as being somebody who was missing.
When I read it, the opening, I thought she had been missing for like a very long time.
You do kind of get that vibe.
Yeah, where it's like, oh no, but it wouldn't be her. She went missing so long ago. And it's like, a year?
That's a year.
Like, I mean, I guess that's a long time for a kid who's a junior, but like, I thought it's what, 96? She'd mm-hmm. disappear in 84 or something? No, last year. The little girl who went missing last year would have given me more specifics. Like, I honestly thought that he was her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that's the only other name that we fucking had. So I'm like, mm-hmm. it must be this the little girl from, you know, 40 years ago trying to get back, and she died in the same forest that she did or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow, okay, this angel has learned a lot and is just taking on a form that she likes or something. I don't know. I had all kinds of hoops I was trying to jump through to make it work.
Just a lot of complex theories, and LJ was like, no, fucking cousins again. Cousins,
that's what I thought you were gonna be like. I screamed between that and the Phantom of the Opera reference.
I did a little bit again this whole like last what three or four chapters.
Yep. This is why I kept reading last night. I'm like, okay.
So many of my notes just say LJ.
The cousins thing. I couldn't fucking believe it. The boy that she had any kind of scenes with,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
who she felt like, wow, he really knows me, and he was doing anything and everything for her, and he was a little bit of a problem. Mm-hmm, you know, like, he was taking her to these places, he knew about the night world. And I'm like, her third cousin, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's who's gonna inhabit her one-week boyfriend's body forever? LJ.
Lisa.
LJ, what? Lisa
Jane.
What are you not telling yourself about your cousins?
Right? Lisa, what? We have to talk about the cousins. We have to. What is going on? You could have made this boy anybody else. I mean, I understand that she wanted that familial connection so that he could.
Yeah, and he's a Harmon through the son's line.
I get that, but.
That's how he knew all the spells.
Did he have to want to fuck her, though? Did he right? have to?
He could have just been like, I care for you. Not, I love you, I'm your soulmate.
Right?
You're my soulmate.
Making aggressive romantic moves.
Wow, you're so beautiful. I'm watching you in your adorable little pajamas.
Right? And they fucking call it out. They call each other cousins. It's not even like a thing where they try to pretend that they're so distantly related that it doesn't matter anymore. It's like, no.
Third cousins.
We have the same grandfather. Like, our grandparents were siblings. Like, that's really close.
Our great-grandparents were siblings. Like, come on.
Right?
She even says at one point, he was my cousin, so his debts are mine. Like, yo, you didn't have cousins 5 minutes ago.
Right.
Where is this coming from?
Right. I mean, and also, you're approaching it from, like, a familial place, which is the appropriate reaction to have.
Jillian, correct.
Yes.
Gary,
incorrect. No.
Gary. With Gary. A G, and Jillian with a G, and they both have violet eyes and blonde hair.
Yes. So, Jillian yells at Gary until he feels bad enough to sort of help her help him move on. They have, I mean, okay, so I'm like being flippant about it, but honestly, this was the only part of the book that had any emotions whatsoever.
We got to see who Gary was as opposed to the facade he puts on.
Right, and Gary actually having an emotional reaction to the fact that he did kill a child, the fact that he buried her in the woods and didn't tell
anybody.
And then
died before he could, like, admit to anything.
Yep, and then went and got drunk and killed all his brain cells and drunk drove into a ditch or something. But, like, this was the only part of the book that was actually kind of good, like, to me.
Yeah.
I liked this whole last chunk. I liked him doing the snowstorm thing that you were integrating into the park.
Yeah, that was fun.
And he tells her, like, he's trying to kill her so they can be together, slash he wants to possess her boyfriend. And I don't really understand, like, Jillian accuses him of sending her to the vampire club so that she will die. But also, he wasn't acting like he wanted her to die. He was acting like he wanted her to fit in.
Yeah, he wanted her to gain power and become a powerful Harmon. Everything he didn't get to do with the rest of his life because he fucked up.
Yeah, it seemed like at that point he was trying to live through her and not be with her. So I'm not really clear on why they made that connection.
I think it was a little miscommunication, but it doesn't read well when it's like, it's an L.J. Smith book.
Right. Well, and especially when they're trying to explain motivation in that same conversation. And it's like,
yeah,
I need you to be a little clearer.
Miscommunication between your two main characters is not typically what happens.
Right. Not at this part of the book where we're kind of putting things out on the table. So he takes her to the place where he buried the little girl. She and David stage finding her accidentally so that her family can get closure. They have a kind of sad little scene where the little girl's father goes to the place where she was buried and very conveniently forgives her murderer with very like little
immediately.
Prompting. Immediately.
Like, I read that and went, yeah, fine, I get it. You got to wrap up the book.
Right? Like, this is the fucking lock, unlocking the shackle so that he can go be in heaven, fine, whatever.
So you would think that a dude who just found out, yeah, actually, your daughter has been murdered, wouldn't just be like, I forgive you. Like, cool, now you know that, like, she's not still out there or kidnapped or something, but, like, she's murdered and buried? That's really weird and you don't know what happened to her. You just know that she's dead and buried. Like, dude.
Yeah, you haven't even gotten the fucking autopsy result back yet. Like, this little girl was burned and then buried. That's nightmarish.
Yeah, don't forgive him. Like, it was an accident, and we know that he, I guess, deserves forgiveness. But if you just went, and here's your daughter's burned, buried corpse, you'd be like, what?
Right? You'd think your daughter got fucking serial killed or something. Like,
yeah. Honestly, one of the most unrealistic pieces of this book.
Yeah. No, that was very, like, if he could just show them where the body was and then ascend, like, less weird.
Now you've brought them closure.
Yeah. But no. He forgives Gary, and Gary is there to hear it. And then Gary floats away to heaven.
Oh, but it was important that Gary also asked for forgiveness or said he was sorry.
Yes. I mean, Gary is remorseful, so we'll give him that. And so Gary ascends to heaven, and Jillian fondly bids him farewell despite everything.
Yeah. Despite Dark Angel.
Yeah, despite the book we just read. And that's the end of the book. Jillian gets together with her cardboard cutout boyfriend. And the last line of the book, in proud LJ tradition, she and David stood hand in hand, watching it, parentheses the snow, fall like a blessing in the night. So, night, once again, the last word of the book.
Oh, right.
Yep.
Got that part.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a real cute little tradition there.
No, I like it. So yeah, that was Dark Angel.
Yes. How was it for you as a reread?
I did not remember anything except that David was the soulmate and Angel was bad and also kind of an angel. Like, I knew he wasn't a thing that we had encountered before, which is why this one is such an outlier. And those are the only two things I remembered. Like, I remembered a little bit more as the book went on, but honestly, a lot of this stuff was kind of a surprise.
I guess that's good then. So you kind of sort of got to see it with fresh eyes?
Sort of. I mean, I feel like I already had this sort of preset emotional feeling towards it where I was like, these are not my friends that I'm coming to visit again. Oh. So I don't really, like, I don't have a connection with this book.
I mean, how can you be friends with them? There's honestly not a lot to her either, because she's changing everything.
Yes.
So you don't even know who she is.
She becomes a bit of a like a spunkier character as the book goes on. So she kind of comes into a personality, and she at least has a perspective, and she has like desires, even if they are extremely teenage.
It would be very fun to see who the fuck she is like 10 years later.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, who is 26-year-old Jillian Lennox?
Mm-hmm.
Does she get into fashion? Does she become a hair cutter? Like, I don't know anything about what she liked. I was trying to find some sense of what should I put in my picture for the book. Right?
What's her vocation, LJ?
We saw her bedroom, but we didn't really get a lot to it. Even though we spent, like, many a night there with her chatting with Angel, it was mostly like, here's her pajamas, and, you know, like, we know it looks kind of like a kid's room, but anything else? Like, even if she's a teenager, there's going to be signs in this room of what the teenager likes.
I think the room did what LJ wanted it to do, in the sense that it sort of conveyed the like childishness that she was stuck in and trying to leave behind. So
I can dig it.
We got that, but
yeah,
there was nothing that filled Jillian in as a person. It sort of just gave her background.
Yeah. So it was very impossible to figure out what might symbolize her beyond the red lipstick.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even her choice.
Yeah, I think even in those last few scenes where I began to like feel any sort of connection to her, it was really only as like, this could be Jenny, somebody that I do like.
Yeah. You remind me of a character that I love.
Right?
But at least Jenny's a fun one.
Yes, no. Jenny is fun. Jenny has interesting things going on. But yeah, like Jillian is, as you said, in transition. So
it makes the whole soulmate thing continue to be a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
Where this girl doesn't even know who she is, and yet this boy, who doesn't have a personality, are soulmates. Hopefully they'll grow up and grow up together.
Mm-hmm.
But soulmates in this universe tend to just kind of like be soulmates at each other. So
I think this is definitely the most egregious one that we've come across so far. And I think that having Angel as a not love interest, but kind of love interest, really skews the focus.
Yeah, because he's there all the time.
Yeah, yeah, he's there more than David ever is.
Mm-hmm. This book has the problem of being in the night world.
Mm-hmm.
Where if she could just be like, I want to be popular, I want people to like me, I think this boy is cute, it'd be fun to date him, as opposed to like soulmates or whatever, then the romance taking a backseat wouldn't be so weird. And her fucking best friend, Amy, could have been the one to help her find the body, you know?
Yeah.
Because like Amy shows up for 5 seconds, the one who left school without her to go hang out with her boyfriend, fucking Eugene. What a fucking name.
Lisa Jane.
But yeah, Amy shows up for 5 seconds and gives her her car and lets her drive it after she just crashed another one. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, in a world that is not a night world, her and Amy could have had a girl friendship that was meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And her being like, stay with me, help me. And then I'm going to tell you all about this stuff because it's important. And now I'm going to tell David, this boy, because I guess he's important. Like, you told this boy who you've hung out with for a week and a half, but you just took the keys from your best friend.
Yeah, your best friend that we've only seen in a couple of scenes. So, like, you know, they've tried to establish her as somebody who is very reliable, but you know, there in another book, there would be conflict between them because they've been ignoring each other for boys. And like, that would be something that they have to resolve. But
they could come back together and do the whole plot.
Yeah. But instead, in this one, it's just like it's like the way that David immediately believes Jillian didn't try to kill him. Like Amy immediately just is a good friend and drops everything for Jillian, even though they should.
I want to walk home.
Where? Yeah, I want to walk home in the fucking middle of the winter, girl.
This isn't Elena Gilbert. Just drive her.
Yeah. And there was, like, when that happened, I was like, oh, she's going to do that thing that they do in these things where they insist on staying with them because, you know, they're in this together. Like, but no, she just gets out of the car. And it's like, I'll walk. See you later.
It was like, here's your Uber that you get to drive.
I've delivered this car to you.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, LJ is her doing her fucking, you know, sisterhood thing where, like, there are a lot of girls on the periphery of this book who are helpful.
Name the something. So-and-so the cheerleader, so-and-so the singer,
yeah.
So-and-so the model. And I'm like, this is awful and I hate it.
Yeah. And then you know, you have Amy and Melusine who are all in there to be, like, helpful female presences. But because this book is so unconcerned with anything that is not Angel, mm-hmm. they all get really shafted.
Yeah. If it was not in the Night World, they could do it with this page count. If it was longer, you could still have it be in the Night World.
It's very weird how much gets shoved to the side for the sake of the plot. And, like, these are romance novels. It's the whole point. Why are we so focused
on the third cousin?
With the cousin? I know, right? And, like, that dynamic of Jillian having, like, this dark, possessive stalker who wants to be with her or have her be dead. Like, we've seen all of that stuff before, and it's, you know, has previously worked as much as it can, but I'll just...
Yeah. I would want to talk to her and go, why are you holding yourself back?
Mm.
Because we know she could take this to weird dark places.
Mm-hmm.
Just be you, LJ. And there was so much that was her in this book, which was great. I really enjoyed that return to this author. But it's like, you gotta just go more. It's allowed. You just want to be like, hey, remember, it's a dark romance. Let's go.
Right?
God, could you imagine if Jillian had just been, like, a little hornier?
Right?
And was, like, kind of throwing herself at Angel, being like, oh my god, and I've got you and you're around, and I know you can't do anything, but, like, you could watch. You can, like, tell me stuff.
Right?
Can you touch yourself? Oh my god. And him being like, this girl doesn't know I am her third cousin. I have to find reasons to, like, not be here and not, like, put that on, but I am kind of falling for her. Oh god, but gross, she's my cousin! Whoa!
Yeah, I don't know why David is here. I mean, okay. I know why David is here.
Because he's a human.
Yeah, and because Angel is dead, and LJ doesn't have a fix for
Angel
that.
Is dead. We need a human. And because these are the stories about what happens when the rules get broken, so saith the book. Nothing happened to break the rules here. That's the funny thing for me. I'm looking at the story going... But she told him, and literally no one knows, no one cares. And in fact, Melusine is like, hey, I think you should join Circle Daybreak, because, like, yes. I think you, as the Lost Harmon princess, who is in love with a human and hung out with humans and mostly knows humans, would be, like, such a boon to Circle Daybreak.
Yes, that problem that was such a problem for the last three books is just right? solved by a single sentence from a single person.
Just being like, you were human, you didn't know.
So, you know what I think it is, Ollie? I think that there was a hornier version of this that was a girl and her incorporeal mind companion. And LJ just was like, I can't do that. That doesn't work in my world, and it doesn't work for my whole thing. But I feel like... You take David out of this and you just make it a horny girl and her ghost, and this is 1,000 times better.
Yes. I wonder if she was like, shit, I have a book due. I'll just change this one. Here you go. Book 4 of the Night World.
Yeah, I really feel like this is LJ, like, slapping censor stickers all over her fucking deepest fantasies. Like, no, I can't do it. It's wrong.
I can't fuck my ghost cousin.
But I want to.
Three times
so
removed.
Bad.
But this boring dude who's, I'm gonna just say he's a bad boy. He's got dark eyes and dark hair and brown skin, I guess. But I'm gonna say later it's a tan, so you don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll be the love interest.
Yeah. I just, LJ, you gotta just make her horny for the ghost. That's to solve all your problems. I mean, it won't solve the problem of him being a ghost.
It'll give you more fun problems to have.
Right, that's a fun conflict.
Yeah, he's an angel. Okay, what if later you find out he's a ghost and then it's like, but I'm still into him.
Right? Maybe they find some way to bring him back. Or, you know what? We're going to find out there's reincarnation in this world. Maybe that's a thing. Like, there are any number of solutions for
like
this.
I said, and if you become a powerful enough witch, I could maybe take up a form that is corporeal.
Right?
Cool, great, on it. Gonna do that. Super horny for you. Let's go.
Right? Dream sex. Astral plane sex.
Sure. He can be in her mind.
Yeah. Inside your mind. Anything. Would have been much better.
Poor Lisa Jane holding herself back like that. Somebody like told her her past ones were too horny.
It really does feel like that.
But they weren't?
They weren't. It's all about chaste kisses and gentle touches.
Yeah. What was her horniest ones? I feel like she was ever.
Forbidden Game. Is it just Forbidden Game? One, for sure.
Yeah. And even that. I mean, again, it's like, you know, we're adults. We don't need to read about teenagers being horny. But from a perspective of teenagers want to read that.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
this is true. They can be a little hornier. It gives stakes.
In Forbidden Game, she does that very well because it is extremely horny, even though all they do is kiss.
Does anyone have sex ever in any of these books? Just maybe, does Elena?
No.
Okay, yeah. Right. Oh, it's all mental fucking.
Yeah.
It's all vampires. It's an allegory for sex. Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's penetration, but, you know.
Yeah, but it's fangs.
That kind. Yeah.
And mental connection in the secret circle and things like that. Right. Where is it? Where is the allegory for sex for 12-year-old Cinna? To be like, hot, love this story.
Right? Even, you know, there are books that we will get into further down the road, or maybe not, season 17, but there is some romantic tension in that mind palace, but David is such an afterthought in this one.
Especially since you start with him being like, I literally thought you were like an eighth grader. I'm a senior. Mm-hmm. You've lived next door to me for, you know, 5 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was never secretly into you. And I remember in the first one, and there was this mention of like the instant connection thing when they first met, I guess.
Not in the first one, because they were childhood
Second
one, yeah.
Oh, right. Because they had known each other for a while. Yeah. So they met when she was younger and he was younger. Why didn't he get that connection and be like, oh, this is weird. I like this third grader and I'm an eighth grader. But she's actually a seventh grader. You know, like,
It comes and goes, apparently.
I guess, like, she's just so young looking that it wasn't like he ever had the hots for her, which is good. He should not at that point if she looks like that.
Yeah.
But if he'd secretly been like, no, I just kind of always assumed you were too good for me or something like that. You know, I'm a screw up and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, the things that kids put on themselves. Mm-hmm. But no, it was just, girl hot today, so want a kiss? Oh, soulmate.
Right. Like, we were in proximity and you seemed of age, and so the soulmate alarm went off.
Right. Until you looked appropriate age. Soulmate alarm didn't exist. You put on some red lipstick. We're good.
Right. Which, you know what? I appreciate that the soulmate alarm has that kind of discretion. Not all franchises are given that kind of grace. So
that's true. It'd be very funny if the soulmate thing, like, I know that there's other reasons why it wouldn't work, but if, like, you had to be, like, 18, as soon as you turn 18, you can find your soulmate. And then you're like, I'm ready to find my soulmate. And you're like, fuck, I don't know who it is. And you're, like, hanging out with your 17-year-old friend. And you're like, boo, this sucks. I thought I would find my soulmate. And then, like, they turn 18. You're like, oh, shit.
Right? And then you feel the zing and you're like, man, so many years wasted.
Bummer. Right? We could have been smooching, because that's the ultimate way of showing that I am horny for you.
Yep. Smooching and mind melding, of course. Knowing each mind other melding. Inside and out as nobody else ever could.
I hate it. Like, I can understand it, you know, in the stories. Mm-hmm. It squicks me the fuck out.
What? Somebody being inside your brain?
I mean, that would probably be bad, too. It's, you know, dealing with the DID shit would be like, ha ha ha, hello. But no, just this idea of unconditional. It's like, could you have your own thoughts for 5 seconds? No, I trust you implicitly. What? No.
It feels very abusable, for sure.
Right? Like, when, I think that may have been why Ash was such a problem for me reading that book. It's like, but this dude is not good to you.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I know he can change. And he did, you know. But if everyone out there has a soulmate, the bad people do too.
Right? Like, who's Blaze's soulmate? What kind of shit are they up to?
Is he going to also be a bad person? Because it's obviously going to be a dude. Or is he going to be a sweet boy and then she takes advantage of it, but they're soulmates, so it's cool he wanted it? I don't know. Like, there's some fucking bad implications there.
I think LJ's assertion would, of course, be that your soulmate makes you better. Like, you change to be the better version of yourself with them.
But bad people exist who are older than 17.
Right. And, like, does that mean that you're going to chain every bad person to a nice person? And that
doesn't seem right. Those poor nice people.
I mean, yeah, like, we will, as we progress, next book, we're going to get, like, some real fucked up guys.
Terrible. And it's like, so these girls have to change you? Is that what you're trying to tell me, Lisa Jane?
Yeah. And, you know, that is very LJ, right? Like, the transformative power of love, all of this new age
of this beautiful sunshine girl will make this dark broody boy into a soft squishy puppy.
Mm-hmm. This is obviously her thing that she's into.
Yeah.
Because that's the most frequently recurring one.
That's what she wants us to be like, hey, isn't this hot? And it's like, your audience will find it to be hot. That is true.
You're not wrong. I do enjoy it. But I think that if you're going to do that, you have to do the work to show those changes in a way that feel not fully dependent on the other person, right?
Yeah. So I think sometimes about the Fear Street saga where Daniel and Nora just met and they were just instantly in love kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like that happens a bit with the Night World where it's like, he's a bad boy, but then he meets them and instantly he hates it, but he wants to be better for her. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that is a stretch. And I know that this is a fantasy, but sometimes you like to see a little bit of reality in there with your fantasy. So you can go, yes, this is a true thing that could potentially exist. So, I'm a terrible, horrible person and someone might find me and see the good in me. And then I could become better, not just instantly feel better. Awesome.
Yeah, these books, more than most, are an unrestrained fantasy, right? Like, we are flying on LJ's id.
Which is fascinating. Sure interested in not quite cousins, though.
Keeps coming back, Lisa Jane.
Now, I did think it was a real fun book overall, though, as far as looking at it from the potential audience's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You die, you come back. You've got this angel that is going to help you get your heart's desire.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, I want to be cool and popular and pretty and get this boy that I've been pining after for 5 years. And then it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, my nose like causes chaos by being hot at school. You know, like, it's a silly, fun story in that way. And it's a very fast read.
Mm-hmm.
And the ending's ultimately pretty good, minus the dad being like, forgive you, serial killer. The Night World just pops in a little bit.
Yeah, this is definitely the most divorced from the Night World that we get.
Yeah, but like, I think overall, it's not a terrible book. It's not a great book, but I didn't feel like I wasted my time in that kind of way that so many of the books we have read in the past have been.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you feel that way. I think for me, it fails in its primary job, which is having a memorable romance.
Which I totally forgot was like the entire point of the book as I was reading it. I was just reading the book.
Right? You'll forget that that's literally the point of this series.
Do you want a Night World that doesn't have a whole lot of romance? Come on down to Dark Angel.
It's like, no, I don't. I'm a horny 12-year-old.
Sin is raging.
I want to see some smooching. But it also, we talked a little bit about it on Discord, about LJ making a lot of phantom references, proving. Yes.
I'm glad you brought it up.
She is, in fact, aware of Phantom.
Yes. He's her angel of music, but it's the angel of popularity.
Angel of popularity, yes.
Oh, that's why David's so bland. He's Raoul.
Yeah. Right?
Phantom's always more interesting.
LJ, it's the number one rule of writing fanfic with a PH. You have to pair them with the Phantom. You can't have them get with Raoul. It's the whole point of fanfic.
Right? Her Meg, though, as Amy, I think that matches up nicely.
Yeah, you know what? You're correct.
Her really wanting, like, her dad around.
Mm-hmm.
That works nicely. Ooh, we even get a good graveyard scene.
So I guess I would make Tanya her Carlotta.
Oh, yes. So good. With Secret Circle being like, oh, I'm doing Arthurian legend. Just lean in it. Oh, with Dark Angel, I was doing Phantom of the Opera. Okay, cool.
I would love that. LJ, like, she's already given us, like, several spins on that dynamic, you know, specifically Forbidden Circle really gets into that.
Did you just say Forbidden Circle?
I did. What is happening?
That's a mashup.
It's not one that I want. You can only dilute Forbidden Game by adding angels.
Exactly.
But I did think it was funny that LJ's solution to the Phantom issue is all of our solution to the Phantom issue, which is just yell at him until he feels bad about what he's done. Fucking take a rolled up newspaper and smack that Phantom in the face. Bad.
Bad. So Phantom. In that way, this is one of the best versions of the Phantom.
It is. No, I love that too. Because, like, I don't know if it's because of LJ, but, like, I watched Phantom of the Opera the first time and I was like, some very pretty young lady needs to go and shame that Phantom into being a better person. And I love that LJ was also like, yes, that is the correct way to solve this problem.
Jillian being like, nah, this guy died being brave. That's not you. That's what you need to do to Phantom. Fucking Eric.
Just berate him until he realizes what he's done wrong.
And then he moves on with his life.
I know, he does move on too. Jillian did as well. Fucking Raoul won that one too.
Fucking Raoul.
So.
Got anything else?
Nope, I think that's it for me.
Yeah.
All right. That's
good by me.
Yep.
Alrighty then. So we have next time. We'll be talking about Night World Book 5, The Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is our final season with Backlist and Chill. You can find us on Twitter at Backlist Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And the Patreon?
You can find the Patreon at patreon.com/backlistandchill for a little while longer.
We wanted to give a shout out to those patrons who are hanging out with us still today. Suv, thank you for being here. Jess, thank you so, so much for hanging around with us for so long. LJ, you have also been with us for so long. Thank you for being here. Our buddy Raven, always. Mm-hmm. Love you. Thank you for being here with us. And
thanks for the drink.
Thank you for the drink, yeah. And Peter, who has been with us since the very, very beginning, as far as I know, like, I think Peter was like our first. Yeah, Peter was our first patron and has just been here. Peter, I don't think you've ever listened to an episode.
But thank you for your support.
Right? Thanks. Thanks for being here. One of these couple months from now, you're just gonna be like, I'm no longer getting charged $2 from Patreon. Wonder what happened.
I was gonna say, I've got $2 more in my bank account than usual. That's weird.
Thanks, Peter. So yeah, Sub, Jess, LJ, Raven, and Peter. Thanks, friends.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. We look forward to shouting out for whoever is with us again next month. Maybe there will be more. Maybe there will be less. We don't know. We love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.